This is Matt and Myron, the podcast.
If you're a college basketball fan, it's been a great couple weeks, men's and women's. Maybe the best collective tournaments of the two tournaments that I can remember in a long time. On the women's side, the stars are winning. You're setting up matchups that everybody's wanted to see. On the men's side, you got what you wanted, which were upsets in the first round, and now the powers playing late in the weekend. As a college basketball fan, which I am, and Myron, which obviously you are as well, you got to be happy with what's happened in the last couple weeks.
It feels like we have everything you would want in a tournament. We have incredible storylines. We have guys like DJ Burns at NC State. You have a Dalton Kennett, the guy who comes out of Northern Colorado of all places, and now he's a projected lottery pick. Zach Edey at Purdue trying to win a second Wooden Award. And then you had some underdogs, Alabama. Football, everyone knows, but to do this in basketball is such a remarkable achievement. And now we have UConn, which that 30-0 run against Illinois maybe is the greatest thing I've ever seen in a game. And now they are Goliath, man. Now they are the team that everybody wants to see fall. It is the perfect set of storylines for the tournament.
You sound like Danny Hurley. Well, let's go through the games here because we had two games yesterday. We got two games today. Let's start with UConn. So UConn wins yesterday to beat Illinois to go to the Final Four. They went on a 30-0 run. I was watching it at a restaurant here in Louisville, and like, you know, so here's the way we are in Kentucky, Byron. If Kentucky is out, or in Louisville, if Louisville is out, a lot of people try to act like the tournament's not going on. You know what I mean? It's like it's like if you divorce your wife, you don't want to go watch her new dates, right? And that's the way we look at the tournament. When we're out, we're like, man, I don't want to watch it. But you still have to because it's good. So I'm at a restaurant and it's on. And, you know, Louisville was awful. Kentucky's out. People are watching it, but they're not really into it. But then UConn goes on that 30-0 run. And you know something special when, like, the whole restaurant starts oohing and aahing and it doesn't involve their team. You know what I mean? And when they just kept scoring and it was 20 points, 23 points, 25 points, there was a sense of, will Illinois ever score again? And that really was special. 30-0 runs at any form of sports, but especially college basketball, like that just never happens.
It doesn't happen. And at one point, I was sort of like, do we stop this? You know what I mean? I'm a big boxing fan. That's when you throw in the towel or the referee steps in and stops the fight. Like, at what point do you just walk onto the court and say, enough? Because that is an Illinois team that was one of the best teams offensively that we've seen during the tournament. And they just got ran off the floor. And I've never seen that level of dominance. And now to me, man.
Of a good team. Of a good team. I mean, that's a three seed they did that to.
Really good team. Now UConn to me is in that conversation of, okay, where do they stand potentially among the greats if they win another national championship?
Well, I mean, if they win like this, like if they win the – well, I mean, again, we have to see. But if they roll through the Final Four like they've done this, then I think – you know, if you're asking me what were the great college basketball teams, okay, I don't think there's been like a historically great college basketball team maybe since that one Villanova team, I think, was really, really good. You know, year was that? 2015? 2016.
2018 was good too.
Yeah, but the one was a lot. I mean, the one was like dominant.
2018.
Okay. Then I think you go back 07 Florida, the second Florida team was really dominant. Yeah. 96, the Jay Williams, Battier Boozer. So 01, that Duke team is really good. The 96 Kentucky team with all those pros, like 8 or 9 pros on it. Antoine Walker, Ron Mercer, all those guys. And then probably Leitner Duke and UNLV the year before. To me, those, when I think of dominant teams, those are the teams that come on. If they make this run, Myron, I probably put them right there with those groups.
They're up there. I mean, obviously the back-to-back puts them in a particular class. We've only seen that once since, you know, only Florida was last team to do it. But just the way they're winning. I mean, there are a lot of teams that are great, and they went on a buzzer beater at some point in the tournament. They're in a tough game at some point. This UConn team has trailed in this tournament, I believe, for 28 seconds of the entire tournament so far. To be dominant the way that they have been is just unlike anything we've seen in a long time. And you got to start thinking, okay, yeah, where do they rank? And also
– also, I forgot the UConn, 2012 Anthony Davis Kentucky team. That should be
on there,
too.
Of course. How did you do that?
Whoa. I don't know how I forgot that. That's, Kentucky fans going to get mad at me. That one needs to be on there, too. I forgot that one.
You forgot that team. Let's just officially call UConn a blue blood, though, because they are. UConn is now in the Kansas, Kentucky, Duke category in basketball.
Listen, if they win this year, this is going to be a number that I don't think people out there have really processed. If they win the title this year, the last 25 NCAA tournaments, 25, they'll have six of them. Six of the last 25. And I think the reason we don't process it, Myron, is two reasons. One, they've only made six Final Fours in that period. So they will have won the title every year they made the Final Four. That's crazy. Like that. Yeah. Just go look historically. That does not happen. Secondly, though, and this is probably what it is, they're not always, this year being the exception, they're not always great during the regular season. As a matter of fact, their last three national titles, they came in as a four seed or worse, okay? Mm-hmm. I think I told you the stat before the tournament started, that in the last 25 years, you had to be a three seed or above to win the title. There are three exceptions to that. It's all UConn, right?
Yeah.
So it's weird because they don't feel like a blue blood in some ways. But, Myron, I don't know how you can argue they're not.
Yeah, and I think it also shows, Matt, that we really only care about postseason results. Like the tournament is how we measure this sport. It doesn't matter how good you are in the regular season. What you do in the postseason is what matters, and UConn has been so dominant. And to me, I would rather have that, Matt. Like, if you tell me you've got a team that's really, really good and they always got a chance to win but fall short in the tournament.
Oh, you'd rather have UConn.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they are, and I think you got to give them full credit, man, because this is one of the best teams I've seen covering college basketball.
Now, Danny Hurley is in and of himself, not exactly the – I don't know. I wouldn't say he's exactly the kindest person or, like, the most lovable person. He might be kind. I don't know, but he's not lovable, I think it's to would say. And when he was asked about his team this year and kind of their place in the college basketball world, here's what he said.
We've defied the odds this year, you know, just with past champions and losing everything that we lost from last year's team and having this giant target that we've carried the entire year, the UConn target, plus the defending national champs target. You know, plus we're a program, our players have a lot of confidence and a lot of swagger, and our fan base, again, is obnoxious as on social, so everyone hates us. And it was a chance to celebrate with them because, you know, our fan base and our organization right now, you know, it's an us against the world of college basketball, and I wanted to celebrate with them a little bit.
All right, I have three things to say. First of all, kudos to Dan Hurley on having the self-awareness to know that UConn is the most obnoxious college basketball fan base. And this is coming from one that's in the top three. But we can't – the only reason you don't know about UConn as much is because they're not as many people – but they're very obnoxious. Second, he is right that they have a target on their back, and that's impressive. They've been top three or four all year. But he says we defied the odds. They have literally been a favorite in every single game this season. Every single game. I wish there was a time a coach would go, you know what? We kind of hit the odds. You know, the odds were on our side, and we just went ahead and did it. I hate how all these coaches, they all act like they defied the odds. You did not. The odds said you would win, and you did.
Yeah, well, but I think if you're Dan Hurley, you got to come up with something. I mean, if you're beating teams by 10, 20, 30 points, good teams, you got to make your team feel like everybody hates them, nobody wants to see them win except their fans. So I actually think he's done a great job of creating adversity, if you will, where none really exist in terms of what they've been able to do. So, you know, you gotta create a chip on your shoulder.
But they didn't defy the odds. You did not defy the odds. The only way –
here's how they
did defy the odds. I will give them this. How about this stat? Through 10 games of the NCAA tournament, the six games they won last year and the four this year, they've covered the spread in every single one of them.
That's amazing.
Now, I know that doesn't matter – in, like, the grand scheme of things, but it goes to show you how utterly dominant they've been in these tournaments, and I don't see any way they get beat for the rest of it. Now, they will play an Alabama team that made the Final Four, and there are two games coming up today Myron is here. Did you buy a hat last week through all of our suggestions?
Nah, I was right back on the road, but I've been thinking about a hat.
I actually bought you a beanie. I saw one at a store, so I'm gonna give it to you next time I see you. I've got this little red and white beanie. It's half red, half white. It's gonna be perfect for you to wear on your travels. We will give more on the tournament that occurred yesterday, the ones that coming, and we have somebody coming up here in a couple segments. The person who wrote the story that made Kim Mulkey so upset, Ken Babb, will be on here as well. It's Sunday Morning on ESPN Radio.
Matt and Myron, the podcast.
Myron, the other big game today or yesterday was Alabama-Clemson. Everybody made their football jokes. You know, everybody's like, oh, it'd be better if it was a football game. I thought it was a lot better not being a football game. What's Clemson's coach's name? Bromwell? Is that his name?
Brunell.
Yeah. Brunell. Lot less objectionable to me as a human being than Dabo. So for that, already it was better to me than having to watch Dabo sprint out there in his khakis like he does something. So I did enjoy, however, the game. It was highly entertaining. Second half was an offensive, explosion. Both teams were just balling, and now Alabama goes to the first ever Final Four in the history of the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I mean, some of us on the show picked them to be in the Final Four.
So you picked them before the tournament, didn't you?
I did.
What made you see – let me ask you why you saw that. Because they lost four of their last six in the regular season, and then they lost in the first round of the SEC tournament. What did you see that made you think they could go to the Final Four?
Well, mostly I'm just good at this. You know, I think that's probably – that's honestly
– No, no, come on now. First of all, you're not that good at it. I mean, what do you mean you're good at this? Like, how did you make that pick? Did you just, draw it out of a hat? Because there was nothing to say. A lot of people were picking Alabama to lose to Charleston to start the tournament.
Yeah. Here was my thought, honestly, when it came to everybody except anybody who was in UConn's bracket. To me, unless you were in UConn's region, you had a chance. Because I don't think there's a great team. But the one thing about Alabama, if you watch them, is when they put up big numbers, 88, 89, 99, they win. You know, I think I put a stat out there. I think
they did put up 95 against Kentucky and lost by 30.
But guess what? That was the only game this season where they've scored at least 89 points and lost. 16 other games, they won. Yesterday was 17. So I figured if you tell me everything's going to be a track meet, Alabama has a chance because I don't think there's this imposing team in their region that is going to necessarily stop them.
Do you think the NCAA tournament, though, has changed in that way? Like, it used to be teams like Alabama you would pick against because they would say, well, the game in the tournament slows down and you can't run and all that. I kind of wonder if that's changing because people haven't paid attention, but college basketball is officiated differently now. I think in a better way, by the way. They don't call as many charges. Well, they don't call almost any charges now. And they kind of let things flow better. Do you think that change is what led to Alabama's success?
Well, I think the block charge change has helped a lot. You know, they're not calling offensive fouls the same way they have in past years. I think the makeup of teams has helped. Matt, do you remember, even going back 10 years ago, every good team in America – had a defensive stopper. They had a dude where if the other team had a guy who got hot, I'm putting him on this guy. 2012, Alex Poitras, 2015. A guy like that at Kentucky before he got hurt. Like, teams don't have that anymore. They don't have a dude where you go, okay, I'm putting you on him, and he's not going to do what Jack Golke did. So I think just everything's offensive today. And defense has just become so secondary.
You just had to bring up Jack Golke. Like, you just had
to.
Like, it's like you can't. You're going to just make, little Oakland jokes forever. Can I just, since you brought up Jack Golke, can we talk about him for just a second? So, Jack Golke, of course, 10 threes against Kentucky. You got to give him some credit for it. I've never seen a man, make success out of his 15 minutes more than him. He did an ad for TurboTax. He did an ad for Buffalo Wild Wings. He was all over, like, pardon my take, and all the Barstool world this weekend. Like, he literally, I'm expecting any commercial I see, he's going to be on there with his looking like Eddie Munster, Billy Donovan up there just smiling. And now he's, like, even talking trash. He said at one point that after he hit his, like, 4-3, he looked at John Calipari and was going to talk trash to him, and he said, I looked at him and I felt sorry for him. I mean, Jack Golke, like, do you like this whole Golke experience the world is still going through?
Well, I didn't think it could get worse until Jack Golke said that. When he said, like, he was so good that he didn't want to trash talk Cal, that to me was, like, you know, even worse.
So do you like it? I mean, do you like the fact? I mean, most people, you know, there's a lot of dudes over the years that have had their experience. Like, you know, Harold the Show Arsenault for Weber State.
Yeah.
You know, you had Doug Eddard for St. Peter's a couple years ago. Like, there are these dudes that have their moments. And then they kind of come and go, and they're working at a car, you know, selling cars one day. And they're like, you know, I was the guy that played for Richmond that beat Syracuse in 1987. Yeah. Do you think Golke is going to last longer than that?
Oh, he'll be, in the Oakland community, he'll be this for 50 years. He'll have a statue.
But do you think, like, are we going to know Golke's name in 10 years?
100% we will.
Okay, so let me ask
you
this.
Forget.
Let me ask you this. All right, so the tournament as a TV spectacle really took place, started in the 80s. Here's my question. 888-SAY-ESPN. You guys are all out there. Who are the Golkes of the past? I just gave you one.
Yeah.
My favorite one is Harold the Show Arsenault. Weber State, everybody knows him for Dame Lillard, but Harold the Show Arsenault beat North Carolina. He had, like, shoulders. Like, he had these big shoulders, and he was wearing these baggy shorts, and he came out and crushed it. I mentioned Doug Eddard. 888-SAY-ESPN. Who are some names like that for you? Do you have one, Myron?
Well, Bryce Drew. It's got to be Bryce Drew.
Yeah, but he went on to do other things. I'm talking about guys that the only thing we
iconic.
Know them for is that moment.
I bet there are a lot of people who only know Bryce Drew for that to this day, even though he's been a coach. I mean, I think it was that.
Do you remember who? Here's a little, do you remember who they beat?
I remember who threw him the pass because
no.
Bryce.
I want to know what team did they beat for the Bryce Drew shot. I know the answer. Yeah. Do you know?
I can't,
Mikey.
Think of it right now,
do you know?
No clue.
Josiah,
the guy
do
who
you
passed
know?
Him the ball went to my school.
Now, nobody cares about that. Josiah, do you know?
No,
I do.
He doesn't know either.
Ole Miss. They
okay,
beat Ole Miss on that shot. Now, you were about to say another good one. What were you about to say?
Ali. I can't.
Ali Farouk Manesh from Northern Iowa, right?
Northern Iowa was a big one. Here's the thing about the rule about this. To really be that kind of a dude, you kind of got to be under 6'3". You can't be too athletic.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like, you got to have a certain look to get that kind of
Can I give you one that became a star after this? Okay, so, like, he had his moment, and I don't think people knew who he was, and now you do know him. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
C.J. McCollum. For Lehigh.
Oh, yeah.
C.J. McCollum, who all of you now know as an NBA star, he got his start beating Duke in the tournament with Lehigh, and I don't think anybody knew who C.J. McCollum was before that.
No, that's a good one, man.
What about Jimmer Ferdette?
No, Jimmer was a great player all year. He was nearly National Player of the Year. Yeah, he was an All-American.
Okay, so you're saying he just had a tournament.
I'm talking about a dude who comes – like Golke. Like, nobody knows who they are. And then they have this moment.
Let me just tell you this. In terms of lifelong fame praise, there are a couple of stages where you can get that. And college has two of them. The Heisman is the biggest one. You win the Heisman, people will know you forever. They'll praise you forever. That, to me, is the club that I would want to be in more than any of the others. Over MVP in the NFL or any of that stuff.
I want to take
number
one call.
Number two is star in the NCAA tournament. Star in the NCAA tournament is number two in terms
of that. I mean, those are probably very big ones. Yes, Mike in Canada. Go ahead.
Heisman
is not exactly like Jack Golke, but go ahead, Mike.
But you don't have to go into the NFL.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Who are? Quickly.
For you. One, Jerry McNamara.
Good.
And second one from back home, Laurent Rivard from Harvard.
I don't remember the second guy. McNamara doesn't count. You can't play at Syracuse and be one of these. I need a small school guy. 888-SAY-ESPN. Get on the line because I know there's more. Jerry McNamara, come on. Although he just became the coach at Siena. Like, you can't pick a dude who played at Syracuse. That's too big. Yeah. And by the way, Myron wants you to know Heisman winners are big. More next on Sunday Morning.
Matt and Myron, the podcast.
Myron and I were completely dorking out during the break. Just sitting there naming dudes. Like, I was quizzing him on big upsets in the tournament and who'd they beat. It was the kind of thing that would make any woman in our life leave us, that conversation we just had where I'm like, who did Oral Roberts beat? You know, in 1982, Middle Tennessee State beat Kentucky. Like, it wasn't good, that conversation.
It's that Twitter thing where people are like, you know, what do you think guys are doing when they're hanging out? Like,
no, this is what Myron and I are doing. I'm sitting here arguing with him about who Florida Gulf Coast beat. That's what we're doing. But wait, I got callers, and you guys are all going to give us your Ali Farouk Manesh, Jack Gaulke-like players of the past. So just hang tight because I'm going to get to that. I want that topic. But I also have Kent Babb. He's a writer for the Washington Post. He did the Kim Mulkey piece that was the talk of the world all week. He profiled her in an extensive profile. And Kent, thank you very much for the time. I'm going to tell you, I read the profile yesterday, and kind of what I took from it, and I want to see if this is what you believed, is I felt like you really showcased why she seems the way she is, which is highly successful, highly ornery, and kind of highly the type of person that you knew would crush it in coaching, but also can turn people the wrong way. Am I right about that?
Yeah, man, 100%. Thanks to you guys for having me. I'm a fan of the show. So, yeah, it's cool to have to come on with you.
Well, thank you.
I mean, yeah, like that was sort of the whole thing. And I wanted to find out what is the cost of the success that a coach has at this level, like this unrelenting, constant success that has been going on for like 25 years. And when I started this, I didn't even know that she had won like four national championships as an assistant coach and player combined. And it's just, there's always a cost. And I wanted also to ask her, like when I originally pitched her on the story in December 2021, and we had a very nice 30-minute, 45-minute conversation, we got along great. It was, you know, hey, I want to see in this NIL world where you can transfer, you can come and go, how this little 5'4" lady from the country can connect with these people who are nothing like her, who are way younger, and you know, it's just a different world, and she keeps doing it, and it's just remarkable to me. So my whole thing was I wanted to figure out what are we not seeing. You know, when we see the cutting down the nets, we see these theatrical performances and the outfits, obviously, on the sideline. But what are we not seeing to the person? And that's what I was sort of setting out trying to answer.
But you wanted to find some of the skeletons too, right? And I wondered, you know, I think in reporting sometimes there's always a question about family, you know, especially if there are estranged family members, and we all know families are complicated. How did you make the decision? Because you lead with that scene, you know, from her family and her childhood home. How did you make that decision to reach out to some of those family members who weren't as connected with Kim now?
So I had read about the house in her book. So I spent some time, I believe it was in either February or early March, reading Kim's book. And the way she speaks about this house, this childhood home, was really fascinating to me. And not only just like the memories that she had and just kind of this like idyllic sports-surrounded universe. I mean, they basically had their own little sports complex right there in their yard. I mean, like, this is a huge piece of land. I mean, it's 25 acres all told, that's sort of split in half between two brothers. And Les Mulkey built two softball fields, a basketball court, two pools, ultimately. And, I mean, so these two girls grew up just playing sports constantly. That was just their thing. And Kim, at one point, called herself her dad's All-American boy. And, like, that was just – she was the star athlete. She tagged along with him. And I just wanted to see that house. Like, that was sort of my thing because, like, the more I heard that Kim was shutting people off from her past, like, I just kind of kept hearing this, like if you had crossed her, she's so deeply loyal that she sees this as an act of betrayal. Like if you don't return this loyalty, that's an act of betrayal often. And I sort of kept hearing that over and over, whether it was people who loved her, played for her, you kind of have to do it her way. And so my sort of theory was, is she becoming this house? Like, is she kind of closed off? Is she, like, is she kind of out there by herself? And then when I went and saw the house, I mean, it really is, like, in a horrible state of disrepair. And, like, I'm trying to sit there and imagine what it used to look like and this dream childhood and what it looks like now. And I just wanted to ask her family members and the people who care the most about her, you know, how did this happen? And not just like, how did it happen to the property, but how did some of this happen to Kim, where like she's pushed people away and there's no coming back? So I don't know if I'd go so far as to call it skeletons. I'm really fascinated by how people become the way they are. And if you're driven, if you're super ambitious and you're from the country and this is the country, then what's the downside? You know, and there's always a downside. And I just wanted to see kind of the things that made her. And it was just really fascinating to me to talk to the people who had sort of witnessed this and were sometimes kind of on the wrong side of her.
Talking to Kip Babb, writer for the Washington Post. He did the reporting our column on Kim Mulkey and reporting on her background and coaching. I'm going to just ask you flat out the question that I had as it was coming out. I mean, obviously there was all this stuff coming, talk leading into the week of it, of what it was going to be. I kind of thought it was going to be what it was, which was she has some difficult relationships with some of her former players. But the most important of those is Brittany Griner, because Brittany Griner was such a force of women's basketball, is still, and this prominent figure. I know who Kim Mulkey is because of Brittany Griner. I've always seen that relationship clearly is not where it should be. I saw her statements. We saw what happened with the Russia thing. How would you describe what things are with Brittany Griner and Kim Mulkey, and were you ever really totally able to figure out why?
I mean, I may be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong on this, but like I think they're kind of dead to each other, and I don't know for sure what is sort of the root of their beef. Like I heard a lot of things, and kind of depending on who you ask, there's a different theory. You know, like some stuff happened when Brittany was in college, or during recruiting, or after she left, and you know, I think ultimately for Kim, this is what I believe. I think that when Brittany wrote about Kim and the idea that she should hide her sexuality at Baylor in Griner's book, I think that was sort of the time that Kim was like, you know what? Okay, I'm done. Again, that's just my theory.
But do you think that happened? I mean, I know you don't know because you weren't there, but do you think that happened? Like, I mean, I know Brittany says it does. She says it doesn't. Did you get the sense who's got the preponderance of the evidence if this were a civil case in court?
man. I get a little PTSD on that one, man. Come on.
well, I mean, I was a lawyer. I got to give you what I can.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Judge Judy.
I think there's a credible suggestion that some players were made to feel like if they lean too much into their identities, particularly with their physical appearances, Kim, for probably a lot of reasons, warned them to kind of keep that under wraps. Now,
but how does Kim justify that, Kent, when she's, like, out wearing these outlandish – like, nobody is more herself than her.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I think it's harder now for her to do that. And just keep in mind, I think a lot of this was when she was early on at Baylor. And Waco, Texas,
is different.
At Baylor University, right after the Dave Bliss crisis, where they're just, like, hunkering down, you know, we are Baylor, all this. You know, Kim wasn't this – sort of peacock on the sideline. I mean, like, she was wearing, you know, kind of like light green pantsuits and stuff. I mean, like, she has taken on kind of a progression into becoming this character over the last 20 some years that I think really kicked into high gear when she got to LSU. I mean, she's like Mardi Gras chic every game. And it's just one of those things where, like, I think her outfits and her personal appearance started catching up with her kind of persona that she like said during press conferences and stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's what I think is confusing to a lot of the players, Matt, is that she has this larger-than-life personality, and that was not always okay for players, particularly at Baylor, and also still at LSU that I kept hearing. And I think that Kim is this super old-school coach in this rapidly changing, super-duper modern world where I think if a male coach did a lot of these things, maybe this wouldn't be remarkable, like kind of the hard-nosed coaching. But I also think some of this stuff is going out of vogue among male coaches. Like, I think the Bill Belichick days are kind of over. And, you know, I think kind of like getting in players' faces, that may not fly anymore. We'll see. But I think that's just – she's just sort of caught between generations. Like, I don't – like, she's between Pat Summitt and Vivian Stringer, and she's not quite the younger generation of these coaches. She's just sort of caught in between, and I don't doubt that that's really hard, but also the fact that she can win a national championship at LSU in her second year is unbelievable, and that's what made me so fascinated by this person.
I'll let you out here with this, Kent. When I guess what I would what is interesting to me about her is she seems to me like female Bobby Knight in 2024. She's got these people that are fiercely loyal to her. And I look at this team of huge personalities and I say, how in the world do these girls like her as much as they do? When I hear all these other people who've played for her saying they don't, and then when I hear her talk, I find her to be very unlikable. But at the same time, I agreed with her yesterday about the LA Times columnist. So that I felt the same way about Bobby Knight for years. Like, I didn't like him, but I also at times understood him. Do you think she is 2024 Bobby Knight?
Kinda. And look, man, just think about – there was a time where sports fans, not Indiana fans, didn't have a problem with Bobby Knight. Like, it was sort of just like kind of sudden that people were like, wait a minute, like, some of the stuff is a little over the top, immature, whatever. Is this all necessary? I mean, by the late 90s, like, a lot of that stuff was kind of a surprise that it sort of crossed this Rubicon. And I'm curious moving forward to see kind of how Kim keeps this up. I mean, is this current LSU kind of mini dynasty, if they keep winning in this tournament, because of Kim? Or is it because of Angel and Flage and Haley? And I don't know. And that's kind of what I want to see. I mean, has she just assembled this unbelievable collection of players? Or is she just like this game-planning personnel genius that has the loyalty? And look, one thing that she's doing that's really brilliant that I'm not surprised at all by is this us-against-the-world mentality. I mean, well, like, whether it's my reporting or what the LA Times did. I mean, like, they think it's them against the world, and that's not unique. I mean, a lot of good coaches do that. But Kim is really good at it. Like, that's kind of what she's always done. And it's not quite playing the victim, but it's just like, hey, everybody's trying to get us. We're going to go get them now.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out this. It'll be something Monday night when they play Iowa. Kent Babb, writer for the Washington Post. Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
All right, fellas. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
There you go. Great stuff from Kent. We're going to take calls on the question of March Madness heroes. I have people writing them in, but I got Jess, Jared, Sam, and Pat waiting. 888-SAY-ESPN. We'll deal with that next here on Sunday morning on ESPN Radio.
Matt and Myron, the podcast.
You had a question for me during the break that I wanted you to ask on air, so go ahead.
Well, you were interviewing, you know, the guy from the Post. It was a great conversation, and then you said something like, what is the preponderance of the civil evidence in the statute of limitations? What are you talking about?
I didn't use all those words. No, okay. So can I give you just a quick legal thing? Just
please,
this is for all
quick.
The listeners. Okay, you've heard the phrase beyond a reasonable doubt, right?
Yes.
So before you can put somebody, before you put somebody in jail, you have to prove they did it beyond a reasonable doubt. But when you sue somebody civilly, the standard is preponderance of the evidence, just basically a majority, okay? So that's why they're different standards. So that's why O.J. Simpson can be found not guilty of the crimes in criminal court, but was found guilty in civil court because all you have to show in civil court is 51%.
not 95%, which is okay. what we show. So what I was saying to him is, if you have to yeah. decide, is Mulkey this or that, 51%.
Yeah. I got to be completely honest with you, and I appreciate that explanation. I still don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, come on, Myron. You're a smart guy. You know the difference
51%?
Between...
51%? Is that a poll? What do you mean? How I don't know what that looks like.
So you just decide. Does the evidence suggest this
Who
is
decides?
More likely or that? The jury.
So the jury's like, you know.
Let me say I sue
51%.
You. Let me put it like this. I'll make it very simple.
Okay.
Let's say I say you stole my scissors. Okay.
Okay.
To put you in jail, the prosecutor's going to have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, which is probably like 95% likely you stole my scissors. But yeah. for me to get you to pay for my scissors, I only have to prove it's more likely than not.
Okay. Is the jury black or white? we're being open about this. I need to know. I need to know what I'm walking into.
I guess it depends on what city you stole my scissors
okay,
in.
I need some more information.
Okay, we'll move to it. Back to our original topic, which is not whether or not Myron stole my scissors. Which is, we were talking about Jack Golke and his 15 minutes of fame.
Scissors.
What other former NCAA tournament players are like Golke? Jess is – just mute his microphone. Jess in Indiana, who you got?
Well, first of all, happy Easter, and I see you're bringing out the lawyer in yourself, and that's great.
Happy Easter.
Now, I was originally going to say Dan Dockage for shutting down Michael Jordan, but we're going to take Indiana out of it.
Yeah, he didn't shut anybody down. All Dan Dockage has done is shut down his career. Go ahead.
Oh, whoa.
You're good.
Whoa.
You're good. So let's go to a small mid-major called Butler. What about Gordon Hayward? Would you put him on your list?
I wouldn't quite put him on the list because I think, and I appreciate the call, they were, like, I'm thinking, like, 13, 12 seeds and higher, and Butler was good and went to the title game, but he was a guy who basically became a star through the tournament, Myron.
Yeah, and he became an NBA, you know, first-round pick. I don't think Gordon – I think what you do after does factor into how you view. He's not on that list for me.
By the way, you didn't like my Dan Dockage line? I mean, to be fair.
Oh, you guys are talking about a Wally Szczerbiak then.
Well, no, Wally Szczerbiak, though, was like I'm talking about a guy that you'd never heard of until the tournament starts. And then he does
something.
Who heard
of Wally Szczerbiak before the tournament?
I had, because he was
Miami
like an
Ohio.
Yeah, Wally
Miami
was
Ohio?
Like he was like third-team All-American that year. Yeah. I'm talking about a dude like Jack Golke, who comes from nowhere, and we now know him because of that. Ali Farouk Manesh is a great example. You know, all those dudes we've talked about. I'm not talking about a kid that just plays at a small school that's really good. Peter in Alabama, you got one?
No, I want to talk about Tim, if that's all right.
All right, well, no, I'm going to come back to you then. Let me do that at the start of the next hour. You hang tight, Peter. Let's go to Jared in Kansas City. Go ahead, Jared.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Happy Easter to you guys. I got three guys for you.
Happy Easter.
Ochai Obagi.
No.
Christian Barnes.
No, he went to Kansas.
He can't pick guys that went to Kansas. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Can't pick guys at Kansas.
I appreciate the call. I mean, I'm not talking about Keith Smart, Indiana. I'm trying to pick small school guys. You can't. If you went to Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, you can't count for that. I'm sorry. Let's go to Karam in Iowa. Go ahead, Karam. Karam or Kareem.
Yeah, it's in Los Angeles, Kareem. Yes. I am just very angry with people going after the coach. For why? Why were they going after the Louisiana coach? What did she do?
Well, I mean, did you read the article?
People just want to.
But did you, Kareem, did you read the article?
I wasn't going to write about her.
Kareem, did you read the article? Kareem, did you read the article?
I have been hearing about it.
Okay, but you got to read the article. You got to read the article. Like, listen, just read the article. I appreciate the call. It's like Kim Mulkey got up yesterday, and she said, I am totally offended by what the LA Times said. And by the way, she should have been. But then she said, but I didn't read the article. Well, how do you even coach, know? Or, excuse me, the Baylor coach.
The Baylor coach did that.
The Baylor coach. Yeah, you got to read the article. So, Kareem, before you ask, like, why are people doing this, read the article. Now, if you read the article and then you think it's unfair, that's a different conversation. But, like, you got to read the article, Myron, before you can get upset.
To be able to comment. You got to. You gotta
and how is it that not one person has named someone that is it qualifies for what
maybe
I'm
maybe there isn't
about.
Another one.
They don't get
maybe
the assignment.
He's one only.
They don't get the assignment.
They didn't understand the assignment. I do know if you steal my scissors again, Myron, I'm going to be very upset at you. We'll get you ready for the next round of Elite Eight matchups. I'll talk to Peter and Alabama, Jared, or who it was, and we'll try again next here on Sunday morning.
Thanks for listening to Matt and Myron, the podcast. You can listen to the show live every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. Matt and Myron, the podcast.